Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It's the Bachelor Lifestyle.
Hello and welcome. We're back. You're listening to the Bachelor Lifestyle from theballerlifestyle.com. We're getting into the home stretch of Katie Thurston's season of The Bachelorette. We had a big St. Valentine's Day massacre this week. I'm interested to hear what everyone thought about what happened, especially my good friend, co-host of the show, Jason Stewart. Jason, what's up?
Hello, everybody.
What'd you think about what went down, buddy?
Well, bottom line is that there are seven left, which means we are three away from Juntas. I have a theory now that kind of came out of this episode, and I think it'll piss everybody off. It should, at least. Because, you know, thankfully for Tayshia, just wanting to introduce these two, Blake from Tayshia's season has infiltrated the group.
Yes.
And now looks to be the genuine leader in the clubhouse. And I don't think any of it was by coincidence.
So this is a Dale Claire situation. Dale and Claire had clearly had a previous relationship, and I'm not saying physical, I'm saying DM, which is the new dating. DMing is the new dating, right? That's the new, I'm talking to somebody, I'm interested in somebody, we're DMing. So Dale and Claire had that going on, but they couldn't keep it under wraps for a whole season, which I would say is to Claire's, that says something about Claire's character, that she just couldn't pretend for an entire season, The Bachelorette, that Dale wasn't the one she wanted to be with, even though pretty much every season, you know, they have the guy picked out in the first couple weeks, right? Or the girl. So this season, similarly, there was a DM situation with Katie and Blake prior to the season. Obviously, he came on, looked like it could have been the stunt thing, like the, like when the Virgin showed up on last season, on Matt's season. She showed up for an episode and a half. She bounced. It was a stunt. Now, what's going on? Blake shows up. You think it's another stunt. Blake's lingering a la Nick Vile. He's around. And I still thought it was a stunt. But I look at the makeouts and I see what I need to see from the makeout. It's hard to pretend to like somebody when you're kissing them. And when I see Blake and Katie make out, as much as I didn't want to believe it was true, I see sparks.
Yeah. And there's like, if it should piss all the other cast members off.
Of course.
Like the original 30 that signed up for this, and then the ones that have been dragged along through all the drama and stuff, it should piss them off. And I really hope, and they never will, they'll never put it on Front Street, even though the show has been known in recent years to kind of break down that, whatever the fourth wall or fifth wall, whatever, whichever one you don't break down. I would love for one of the cast members to be like, this was all bullshit. We all went through the motions for a couple of weeks.
And this was all planned.
Until the producers decided we're going to bring on the guy that she actually wants under the guise that it's Tayshia's buddy. And then we were all like sent through the ringer. And because that's how I feel as a viewer now. I feel like those first few weeks and like everything else is just kind of like, oh, this was all going to end this way. And we all fell for it. You know, she brings Blake on. She gives him the one-on-one date. They're very familiar with each other, yeah. Obviously, much more familiar than they had pretended to be. And then in this episode, he does a couple other things that just show that these two, it looks like, I would be shocked if he's not chosen at the end.
It definitely comes down to the final two. And much like, and this is why this is so problematic for this show, this stunt. Remember when Nick Vile showed up on Caitlin Bristow's season? And look, no judgment. Anybody should look how they want to look. I'm having a hard time with Caitlin Bristow's face on this show. There's a lot going on. That upper lip, there's something happening there. There's the brows, the eyes. It looks like a whole different person. It's confusing. That's all. I'm happy that she looks how she wants to look, though.
It's the kind of distracting.
It is
surgical procedure, yes. that you're almost like used to seeing, especially in Los Angeles, in women much older than Caitlin. Like, she has that look about her. She just seems to be too young to have that kind of a distracting, yes, surgical procedure.
Yes.
You know,
I agree. Remember when Nick Vile showed up? He showed up in the middle of the season. She fucked him that night. No judgment. My guy Bob Guinea had sex with six or so contestants. But my point is, Nick Vile got to the end. He didn't win. But you know that guy Sean that did win always had that shit in the back of his head. And you know that when their relationship didn't work out after the show, you know there was a lot of this. Do you still follow Nick Vile on Instagram? I see, because like, right. I see right here, you like this picture of him in a leather jacket, like making some stupid look at the camera with this dumbass face. Wait, why are you liking these pictures? Trust me, that happened. And if this Blake guy doesn't win, I'm telling you right now, he is poison to the relationship of whoever does win. It's just starting off from a toxic place. That's all there is to it.
And I mean, I had to do a little bit of digging on Caitlin's relationship past, because I forget about these people the second the show is over. Same. But
they show up on Paradise, and I'm like, who is this person? I mean, she gave a rose to somebody tonight, and she said his name, and I'm like, there's that name on this? I don't want to give it away. And then they showed it, and I was like, oh, right, that guy. That guy's called that. Yeah.
So, and just Googling, because Caitlin came on and did like a double date that they incorrectly kept saying it was a one-on-one. It wasn't a one-on-one. No. It was a double date.
It was a three-on-one. Yes.
It's pretty much nothing like a one-on-one.
Yes.
But and she was with a guy named Jason, who I do remember was a cast member on one of the Bachelorettes, a nice enough guy from the East Coast. But I'm like, that guy didn't win. And then I had to remind myself as I Googled, she was with that Sean guy. Yep. And Sean was like, he was kind of a man's man. Like, he wasn't one of these recent cast members. He had some pride.
Yep.
And I remember saying at the time, and I think we probably say this after every season, is I don't know how these people withstand. I don't know how these relationships withstand the pressure of the watch back. And Sean, especially after he watched that season back, if he did, I mean, any man with pride would be like, I can't have a relationship with this woman after what just transpired on this show that went out to the world.
Yes.
And like, and so, I mean, that, I think they lasted longer than you would think they did. And then she started dating this Jason just because people within the Bachelor world always intermingle. And
of course they
now
do.
She's dating a cast member and they're happy. But you're right. I think that when the producers do this shit and they throw these things into the mix, like, they kind of poison. any other relationship, and then I don't know. Anyways,
yeah, so, I agree.
It comes down to this: Katie and Tayshia and Caitlin are sitting there at the beginning of the show, and Katie has to make us look like fools or seem like fools, and say and thank Tayshia for bringing Blake on, for introducing Blake to her. Thank you very much. And then they start talking about a weird subplot to this episode, and that's jerking off. And Caitlin and Tayshia and Katie are having this awkward conversation about masturbation and how the guys the guys admit to Katie that they do it and how often they do it.
Yeah.
And Tayshia, to her credit,
Is that your Android interrupting my talk show?
Yeah. Tayshia, who has won The Bachelorette, she kind of showed her colors here. She Katie was telling them details about what they have told her about their masturbatorial habits.
Insane.
And Tayshia's like, wait a minute, they tell you that?
Yes.
And then she says something like, Jesus' ears can't hear all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. She's very cryptic. She's like, I've heard things. This is clearly a producer's idea. Nobody is getting their 2 minutes at the cocktail party and sitting down with Katie and being like, oh, you look so good tonight. I got to be honest. I jerked it 3 times yesterday thinking about you. You were in that tight dress yesterday and I just couldn't help. I had to get out some baby oil and just when the other guys weren't looking, I went in the bathroom and when my roommate was doing overhead press outside, I went in the bathroom. I just stroked my dick. I just couldn't hold it. I had to do it. Like, she doesn't know, and these guys don't know each other well enough to be like, hey, like guys don't talk. I mean, guys talk about masturbation, but they're not like specifically saying, hey, I jerked it yesterday or whatever. Like, this is an insane premise on its face should be laughed out of the room. But because morons are in charge of this show and morons, namely me, are watching it, we just go along with it. We go along with these ridiculous premises like this is real life, and in no way is it whatsoever.
And so the producers, Katie, Caitlin, whoever came up with this idea was like, hey, let's do this challenge to see who can hold out the longest. And then Caitlin comes up with this, who's the master of their domain, you know, and every single guy that's watching, I know that there, 98% housewives are watching it. And then there's me and then you half watch it. But like no male watching this episode saw this quote unquote challenge and thought to themselves, oh, man, that's going to be a real tough challenge for these guys. They're really going to have to pushed to the limit to not jerk off because
unbelievable.
Just a little secret here.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no way to enforce this challenge.
Right.
Everything is on the honor system.
Yes.
And if you're talking about honor system and jerking off, nobody is sharing that. No. To your point, no. 3 minutes ago, nobody shares it anyways. Right. It's right. a total non-entity, this challenge. But they bring it up just to be cute and to be like, hey, we'll just see which guy can hold out the longest. And
everyone's so dumb.
How and why is this going to happen?
It's so, just because they want to be a little ribald. They want to be like they want to exist in the world of social media, of TikTok, of Instagram. They want to have it both ways, where they're the proper place where people go to find love, but they also want to be like, no, we're sex positive and we like to talk dirty too. And it's just, you can't be both places. You gotta lean into one or the other.
Right. And so, Caitlin goes to the room of guys on a couch and they start talking about this challenge. And all the guys are kind of looking at each other and laughing, and they start doing their little innuendo, like, man, this is going to be really hard. And then they giggle, and then, we'll see what's to come. And then they giggle, and it's just so fucking stupid.
It really is.
Like, there were a couple of times in this episode, like, I admittedly liked this show. Like, I think you have much more disdain for you hate watch this show much more than I do.
Yes.
A guy like Petros Papadakis like Haight watches it.
Yep.
So that he could do a little segment on his radio show.
Great segment.
You hear the term guilty pleasure a lot when people. I don't use that term. I actually like watching the show. It's entertaining. It's a good formula. It's a great look see into the human. What we do and how we react to things. Now, I was embarrassed at least twice in this episode. One of those things where I wasn't enjoying watching the show.
Yes.
This masturbation thing is one of them.
So dumb.
I don't know who they think they're fooling with this one.
No one.
So the guys sign up for this quote unquote challenge.
Also, Katie says at one point, I think they could make it at least 24 hours. What kind of depraved maniacs are they hiring for this show that these guys can't make it a full day without cranking it? Like, guys, also, you have a roommate. Like, are you 13? Like, it's an insane idea that there's just, not only does she know that they're doing it constantly and they can't stop, we're supposed to believe that they can't make it a day? Where would they even find a moment? They're having to act on this stupid show all day. They got a roommate that they go home with at night. Like, how these guys, they don't have time to do that. It's insane.
And another thing that really kind of shows how naive she is. Yeah. And I know sex positive and all that stuff, but like naive is that she insinuates a couple times. I think she outwardly says it to the Tayshia and Caitlin that she is flattered that they can't contain themselves. In other words, these dudes are constantly jerking off about me. She thinks that it's flattering to her that dudes are doing it once or twice a day. When again, every guy watching in the audience is like, okay, I'm guessing they've thought about you 1 out of 10 times since they've been there. So anyways, they agree to the challenge, and then Caitlin drops in the one-on-one date, and they give it to Justin, the artist. Justin is just like one of these dudes that there's nothing remarkable about him. He's an artist. He says what you're supposed to say. I don't think he's that genuine, but they did that really awkward date where and they take pictures like they're being
wedding pictures.
Like they're married. Yeah. Wedding pictures.
Oh my God.
And this one, they take it to another level.
So uncomfortable.
First of all, our dude, Franco, is featured again.
Why is that guy there? He's there every season now? He's the show photographer? And also, why was he wearing shorts?
He checks off a box. He checks off a box, and they want to utilize him as much as possible. And he's very flamboyant, very colorful.
Zero charisma, dude. Like, let's get some energy going, buddy.
So he says, all right, we're going to take some wedding pictures, but first you guys are going to write vows to each other.
Insane.
So it's this weird thing where you have two people who have spent probably a grand total of 12 minutes together. They're now going to write vows about how much they mean to each other, and they're going to spend the rest of their lives together. And this is another part of the episode that just made me cringe. Like, how she walks up on him like he's waiting for her on wedding day. And then he just starts basically giving her cliches that you hear in any vows about protecting her and giving her his heart. And it's just not an easy thing to watch. Then they take pictures afterwards. Again, we're 15 minutes in, and I'm really cringing at the content in this episode. I'm not comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Basically, Justin says at the cocktail that he's never been real close to engagement, but then he says all the right things. He's like, but I've never really met a woman who has checked off all the things on my list.
Right.
And I've thought about, maybe letting a couple of those things go, but you've taught me that that you show me that you have all my qualities and then a couple more.
I felt very like Justin, I feel like, is a nice guy. Yes, he's inventing qualities for Katie to check off, but also like not so much that he's insincere. He is insincere, but he's insincere in that he's just not, he's not capable of having this deep of a emotional connection to himself and what he wants from a woman. He's just, I don't know how old he is, but he just felt way too young. And as this date progressed and it got more emotional, this dude was so far over his head. He looked like an actual deer in actual headlights.
Yeah. And yeah. So it isn't sincere because he doesn't know her at all. So, but he's coming with things out of his ass that she really likes. So overall, like, he said all the right things at dinner and everything else, and they're good. Back at the house, you know, everyone is plotting against Hunter. Now, the last we left Hunter, he was given a rose last episode, and he acted really cocky with the rose, and he pissed a couple people off. He took some of their time at the cocktail hour and all this stuff. So Hunter is like public enemy number one, as was Thomas, as was Cody, as was what's his face, the motivational speaker. So we get to the point where they start talking about Hunter being the bachelor historian, how he knows the show up and down, how he quotes people from certain seasons, how he I guess he participates on blogs and message boards.
Oh, my God.
If he admitted all this stuff in the house, that's what a complete moron, and he deserves to go home.
He's an idiot. He was talking to Greg, and he's like, "Greg, you might be getting another. You might be getting another one on one." And Greg's like, "I already had a one on one." And he's like, "I don't think you get. There's such thing as two one on ones." And Hunter's like, "Oh no, it's happened." And he's like, "Oh really? Wow, that'd be cool. I'm not seeing it happen." He's like, "Oh no, it's happened. Especially if the guy got the first 101. Like, he has like charted it out. He's like, yep. He's like, what's that movie with Russell Crowe where he's like he's really smart. He does math real good.
Something mind.
A beautiful mind. He's like a beautiful mind where he's like got the charts and he's doing algorithms and he's got square roots written on a thing. Like, he's got it so figured out. Which, like, even if you really – like, we do a show about The Bachelor, and I'm surprised every season with something that happens normally. Even if you know all that stuff about The Bachelor, like, you got to keep it low in front of the group. Like, there's probably guys there – not many, but there's probably a couple guys there that have some knowledge of The Bachelor – but this guy's playing it like he's on Survivor or The Challenge, where he's like, I got to align myself or else I'm not going to get the immunity rose. Or like, he's like playing it so hard. He should have been gone immediately. And of course, what does the entire rest of the house do? They run to Katie with that information.
Yes, as being calculating, as trying to win a game, as opposed, like, and this is why you don't admit these things. I mean, if we've learned anything, our guy Thomas showed us that you never admit to considering being The Bachelor when you were considering being on the show. You should never admit to it, even though most guys do.
Of course.
And then never admit to being a super fan of the show that knows all the seasons and can quote like strategic maneuvers. Bad move on Hunter's part. That just shows you how dumb he is. So he basically seals his fate. He starts telling guys how into the show he is. But he also says to Greg that he has, of the top four, he thinks he's got three of them already figured out.
Yeah. That's the other thing. He's handicapping it.
Yeah. He's like, I'm in the top four. You, Greg, are in the top four.
He's like, it's you, me, Connor, and one more.
Catman, Connor.
Yeah, Catman.
So, you know, spoiler alert, you know, he's one out of three by the end of the show. So, anyways, everyone runs up back to Katie eventually, but not before they get on this group date. Yet another really cringeworthy group date where there was this funny part. Everybody is named on the group date except for Catman, this Connor dude, the music man. So everybody's going on this group date. There's something on the card about being a king and a queen. And the queen reference is that there are two drag queens that host the date. Now,
pretty good.
The dudes walk into this room. These two drag queens come out. And they have Michael in the interview. Michael A.
Yeah.
Our single dad who
Widower.
Widower, single dad, but I have said from the get-go is pretty effeminate. Like he,
I would agree.
He has a very soft, effeminate side to him.
Yes.
And I think he confirmed one of my suspicions when as the drag queens were coming out, they have Michael off camera saying, if this is a drag contest, I'm in.
That was like yes.
He was giddy.
He wanted to dress in drag. Yes.
Oh, yeah, he was giddy.
I didn't catch that. And then another guy was like, hey, am I supposed to be checking them out or not? Like, no judgment, but you know those are men, right?
Was it Brandon, the not so?
Oh, I hope not. He's one of my favorites.
But Michael really showed his cards, I think, in that admission.
Yes, like, big time.
That's what he's doing.
I'm in
at night in Cleveland or wherever he which explains a lot. To be honest, it makes perfect sense. So as you know, I forgot. We forgot about this. This is great. At the cocktail hour, or I'm sorry, the dinner for Justin's date, a lot of tears because Katie talks about her deceased father and stuff. They get out and they walk around the corner and very Caucasian music artist named Max is serenading.
So I needed to know this isn't Lane Murphy from earlier this season, from like two episodes ago. This is a new, different guy.
Max.
One name only.
And it's not Max the band, because I looked it up.
Good. We've been fooled.
His government name is Max Schneider. He was the 2019 iHeart Music's New Pop Artist of the Year. So the guy's got a little bit of recognition. I don't know him.
No.
But yeah, white guy with a white band. Singing to singing to them as they dance.
Yes.
But anyways, so we're getting in the middle of this drag queen date, and it has nothing to do with them dressing up as men. In fact, it's just a roast. They're supposed to roast each other.
Yeah.
The drag queens keep calling it a debate, but it's not a debate. It was supposed to just be a roast where you get up. And the premise is pretty simple, but no one seemed to pick up on it. It was, explain to us why you're the one and why the others are not. And then as you're explaining why the others are not, you make fun of them. It's just a simple roast. But these idiots, either they didn't get that concept or they're not smart enough or imaginative enough to roast anybody. They just kind of went up into their corners and wrote stupid little innocent things about why they should be the one. They didn't really take aim at anybody except for Hunter, who, he's a short guy, so he's easy to make fun of there. He's a historian of the show, so they made fun of that a little bit. But no one just got up and was like a real, like, charismatic roaster. Like, I was waiting for that one dude, and I was thinking maybe it was Aaron or somebody who would just cut everybody in the room and look really cool.
Yes.
Nobody did that. Greg wrote a poem that had zero roasting. What's his face? James, this was his idea of shit talking. He's like, as far as I see it, I'm your guy, and everybody in this room is playing for second place.
Nice.
That was his big shit talk moment.
Yes. Well, it's a fine line you got to walk, because you want to be an asshole, but you don't want to go too hard at the other guys. Look, this is important. This is anybody that's read the amazing pickup artist expose, The Game by Neil Strauss, will let you know. You can't be seen to be thinking too much about other dudes. It's not hot. It doesn't make you look like the alpha in the room. It doesn't make you look the most desirable. So maybe you find a way to make fun of the dudes in a way that makes it look like you barely know who they are, because that is the move. The move is not to be like have 50 jokes on Hunter, which they all did, which is great. But you want to have like a little something, but also be like too big for it. Too cool for school is the way to operate if you want Katie to be in on it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the format, though, was roast, and it came nowhere close to that.
Yeah.
And the big controversial moment, and again, Trey is always up in other people's business. He overheard an exchange where the drag queen was like talking to Hunter. And she's like, are you in love? And he's like, haven't had enough exposure yet. I can't go there yet. And then on the, when they were up on the, whatever on stage,
Dayas,
Hunter was told Katie, I'm falling in love. So Trey kind of called him out on that on the stage. Like, yeah. You weren't sure 5 minutes ago. Now you are.
Well, no, they don't say the L word now, or at least I don't think he did. Everyone's saying I'm falling for.
Right.
I'm falling for. That's the new thing they say on this show. That feels like it's been coached. It's like when everybody in one, either the Republican or the Democratic Party, has the same talking point about an issue. That's not an accident that they're all saying that thing. It's been memoed to all of them. Same as I'm falling for. I think I'm falling for. I'm pretty sure I'm falling for.
Yeah. Now it's time for Hunter to fight back, because it basically went from it was supposed to be a roast to like them just having one of their typical bitch sessions that they have on a couch, like, Hunter, you have a Final Four in mind. You know, you're playing this game. Yeah, he's like, no, I don't. No, yes, you do. Whatever.
James starts it. The Boston guy I've fallen in love with. He's got such a cheesy look that it's a good look that he does the full what do you call that? Turtleneck. With the chain outside the turtleneck, with the jacket over, with the hair slicked back to the side, and a Boston accent. What's not to love?
Yeah. Well, James is one of the guys that was pointing out how much Hunter is strategizing this whole thing. Hunter, when given a chance to roast the other guys, he actually did say, I don't have any insults for these guys. I don't want to do that. And then he just talks about how he's falling for Katie. So I guess he tried to show that he's kind of above the fray and everything else. It was just kind of a cringeworthy date, to be honest. I wasn't into it. It didn't come off well at all. They have the cocktail hour, and this seems like the formula for this season. Yep. It's we'll go to the cocktail hour of the group date. And the discussion will be, should we tell Katie about the latest drama, about the latest guy who's not here for the right reasons?
And it's Thomas all over again.
James wants to take this one. He wants to take the sword, and he's going to go to her during the cocktail hour and tell her that, look, Hunter's not here for the right reasons. But before that, mm-hmm. before that, they have like Blake and Andrew, the football player, and they're just having a great time. Blake goes and starts telling her how often he typically jerks off. He's like, Hey, I just want to let you know, I'm doing well with the challenge so far. It's been less than a day, but I'm doing well with it. And she's like, wow, is it usually that hard? He's like, I typically do it at least once a day, maybe twice on the weekends, maybe more on the weekend. Like he's just having an open discussion and she's loving it. Yeah. Like she's, does that whole it's getting hot in here thing. Like she likes this conversation.
Yeah. She's sex positive.
And I think that again, she was thinking he was doing it so much because of me, to me. He was jerking off to me all these times. So she's on camera saying, oh my God, Blake was great, and I just love Andrew and all this stuff, and I can't imagine anything happening to ruin this date.
Yep.
So of course the next person that comes in is James, and he ruins the date. He tells her Hunter's the guy. Then it looks like they have Trey and then Aaron, and the typical, this is Hunter isn't here for the right reasons.
Yep.
What does she do? She goes to Hunter. This is what they're saying about
you. Denies it.
This is like this is the formula.
Hey, what if we get them all together in the room? Although they were all together in a room at the roast thing, and they all said it to his face, so it's obviously true.
And it's like this. It's he basically says, he says something that I thought was actually noteworthy. He's like, look, I'm trying to be the adult here. Like, I don't want to be drama or bring drama to you. I'm not trying to do that. I don't know how to defend myself here because I'm not what they say I am. So I don't know. His response wasn't awful, but I guess it wasn't enough for her.
Right.
Because she goes back after being upset and tells the rest of the guys, I'm not really feeling it. I'm going to end this right now. And then nobody's getting a rose. So nobody gets a rose on the group date. Everyone's kind of peeved and emotional about it. And you're thinking to yourself, you guys chose to tell her about this.
Yeah.
So you don't have any right to be pissed that this thing went awry.
Again, don't be too interested in the other dudes. Work your own thing. That's game. Game is not talking about other dudes' game.
Aaron and Trey have spent their entire bachelorette season talking shit about the dude that isn't here for the right reasons. That's their entire thing. Neither of them, as far as we've seen, have worked on their relationship with Katie at all. And it's episode, however, 5 or 6 right now. And we see what happens to those dudes in the end anyways. So Connor, the music guy, right? The cat guy, he gets the final date and he's fired up about it. There's no one-on-one. Like, one-on-one implies a woman, a man. This was a double date with Caitlin and Jason. It was a double date the entire time. So it really wasn't a classic one-on-one where you can, quote unquote, get to know each other better and advance your relationship and whatnot. It's a barbecue. They're just kind of hanging out. And they start something out of nowhere, and I have no idea where this came from. Caitlin and Katie are kind of talking to the side about how great Connor is. And then, but Katie's like, yeah, there's just this one thing. I just can't quite, describe it, but it's just missing. You know, when I kiss him, something's missing. Yeah. I just need to know, see if I feel it with a kiss. And then Caitlin starts talking about how they need to have this last kiss so that Katie knows for sure. And I'm thinking to myself, I told you in the very first episode and then in the second episode, I don't ever want to see this guy kissing anybody again. He's a disgusting kisser.
Yes, he is.
It's distracting how bad of a kisser he is. And I'm amazed that all of the season for him came down to this. My first instinct to the guy was that you're not supposed to look like you're eating someone when you're kissing them. So they have this like weird buildup where Caitlin keeps saying he needs to kiss her one last time. He needs to give her this kiss. And I'm thinking they've already kissed, first of all.
Right.
But her and Jason are watching from a distance. And then finally, after Connor and Katie exchange feelings about each other, he moves in for the kiss, and he's a horrible kisser. Okay, so,
well, she doesn't say that at first, though. At first,
she never does.
At first, she's like, "Yeah, I feel it too. I like you too. I'm into you." Like, she makes it seem like he's moving on in the show. And also, don't sleep on this all happening after she saw his skills on the volleyball court.
Yeah, I know.
This is that was not a cool position to put him in, where the guy clearly has a negative level of athletic ability, and then you ask him to play volleyball, a sport that a lot of people have never played in their lives.
He plays volleyball like he's a math teacher who plays dual piano at night. That's how he plays volleyball.
He does. He at one point he went to spike it, and he jumped, and his jump was barely just like a couple inches. He got credit card air, as they say, barely a couple inches off the ground. And yet somehow he launched into his spike on the downslope of the jump and spiked it under the net. Like anybody could just lean back with their with the butt of their hand, with their palm, and just pop it over the net and be like, oh, I tried to spike it. He tried to spike it down, and it went, it landed at their feet. It didn't come even close to the bottom of the net.
Yeah, that was off-putting, to be sure. I don't expect everyone to be an athlete or whatever, but like he looked like a spaz who hadn't done much in his life athletically. But you're right, that could have been a factor for sure, because she was telling Caitlin, he's such a great guy, there's just something that it's missing here.
Yeah,
they kiss each other, and Connor's feeling really good about how the one-on-one date went. And he's getting ready, and he always has a couple buttons from the top. He's always unbuttoned a couple from the top with his button down shirts. And you could tell he probably puts on a little too much cologne. He just looks like one of those guys. And he's almost ready. They're in the dressing room, and she comes knocking at the door, crying in her hoodie and mom jeans.
Yes. That's not a good sign. Yeah.
And he knows right away, I think, that this is it. There's no dinner. There's nothing. And he was feeling really good about himself. This was kind of heartbreaking, just because I think he really is a good guy. Like, he's shown us this entire show. He's got a big heart. He did make that like misstep of admitting that he's an alcoholic and never quite said that he's off the sauce. And he put a lot of it on the establishment that was feeding him free drinks.
Yeah. His of all their admissions of terrible behavior in their past, his was by far the most troubling.
Right. And they never quite resolved that.
No.
But other than that episode, he just seems like a nice guy. He's a math teacher. He's just pretty harmless, and he sings to her and shit. She likes him as a guy. He's really friendly. All the guys in the house like him.
Yes.
She lets him down as best as possible. By the way, she lets him down. She has normal feelings in this. In other words, normal people in normal life and dating lives have that thing where like they go out a few times and they really like the person that they've been dating, but there's not a romantic thing going on, and she just needs to tell him that.
Yes.
And that's all she does. There's really nothing. There was nothing mean-spirited or shitty about any of this.
It's actually like, kind of worse to say when we kiss, I just don't feel it when we kiss. Like,
and
you don't feel it at all.
That's what I was getting to, that her feelings onto themselves were normal, and that's all she had to tell him, that I like you a ton, you're a great guy, it's just not there romantically. And but she says one thing too much. She says, because he says what happened, that was what went wrong, and at that point you just do the cliched nothing went wrong, I just have more feelings for other guys, romantic feelings. And she instead says, when we kiss, I'm just not feeling it, or there's just something that's missing when we kiss. And I'm thinking, why would she say that? But he did end up asking the producers or the camera what I basically had said from the very first episode. He said, God, how bad of a kisser am I? And I'm like, that's that was no, from he's a very I nailed that from the very beginning.
No, he's going to be ruined for this. There's this, like when you're younger, there can be just one little thing that a girl tells you when you break up, and it is like it will just weigh on you for years until you mature out of it. Like, was not fair to do to him. It's much easier to go, look, there's other guys here that I just like better. Like, you seem like a great guy, but you're not for me. And plus, did you see the way you played volleyball? Like, when you watch the tape. That would be easier because he's never going to play volleyball again in his life based on the way he played that game.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So it's amazing that my first instinct about a guy was his undoing, kissing. He was a horrible kisser, and he paid the price for it, literally. So he's sent home, but first he makes a pit stop back at the guy's place. They're all sitting on the couch, and he walks in, and he tells them – that he's leaving, and then he starts tearing up. And if there is one episode in this entire season that exemplifies the kind of men this group is, it's this one scene and this one episode. Okay. A guy comes back and tells them that he's been let go and starts crying. Okay. I get that.
Yeah.
What typically would ensue are bro hugs and, man, it's great to know you. Let's keep in touch. Keep my number and all this stuff. These multiple guys start to cry. They start to break down again. Emotionally,
yes.
Because she has sent home a guy.
Again. Yes.
The entire format of this show
again.
Is
yes.
Everyone leaves except for one person.
Act like a man. You want to look like a man. She's a woman. You want her to think of you as a man. Not as some guy that gets teary-eyed about a guy he was on a game show with for 2 weeks. Like, what? Like, you guys can exchange numbers, follow each other on Instagram, travel to each other's town and get a beer. Hopefully Connor B doesn't black out. Like, just like calm down about how sad you are that he's leaving.
Let's get this straight. If you're there to win the show. At the very least, you're there to win the show. So the competitiveness in you, no matter how good the guy is, you're glad that it's not you and it's somebody else. And then if you are chasing the love and you want it to eventually be you and her, then you're glad she has let go of somebody who has been a threat. It's like, but they just start bawling and hugging each other. I just couldn't. We've never seen this. Trey is the most emotional in the entire thing. I don't know what his motivation was for coming on the show. He seems like the guy that was there to be the police for fairness.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to have the same amount of time.
Everyone
gets a fair shot.
He was all in on Thomas. Then he was all in on Hunter. Him and Aaron. Aaron is a sociopath, and he actually terrified me, and he should have been gone right away. Trey seemed very nice, but just like you're saying, like, what is your game here? Your game is to be everybody's buddy and be in charge of the house. Like, you're trying to get a rose, brother.
It's like his thing was, I'm going to try to make sure that she is surrounded by everybody who's here for the right reasons, and that everybody who is here for the right reasons has a great time. That's my job as Trey. It's not to fall in love or to win the show. He was devastated that some other dude was sent home. It was incredible. Greg, who cries once an episode, he was also in tears. It was just a room full of dudes crying that another guy was sent home. It was the most surreal thing we've seen on this show. And it really, to me, it was like the perfect example of the kind of cast members that we're dealing with in this entire thing.
And it is a generational thing. I feel sorry for the women of Gen Z because there are no men left as far as I can tell, because I don't see anybody other than the goon Brendan, the Canadian hockey player, who I just learned his name was Brendan at the end of this episode. Spoiler alert. But I mean, look. He's sweet, but he's a big dummy. Like, he's not going to win the show.
Yeah. No, he definitely – and he is the second Canadian, by the way. If there's seven guys left, two Canadians, Blake and him. But that was just a weird thing. But Blake does something, whether it was completely the producer's idea or not, Blake does something that makes a lot of sense and good for him, okay? As you have a bunch of fucking dudes crying with each other and hugging each other, Blake takes his little stereo system and goes John Cusack and Say Anything and holds the stereo above his head, the speakers above his head, and it's playing a country song.
Where did they get that speaker? It was like a military-grade speaker. Like what?
Yeah, who the hell knows? It was obviously a Bluetooth thing. Yes, whatever.
That the crew used. It, like, they probably use it for production. Like it's like to monitor backstage. Like it doesn't read well on TV. Get a yellow, like boombox looking speaker that's like obvious what it is, that's large, like insane choices.
So it was actually a genius move, whether it was completely scripted, contrived or anything, but it was a great juxtaposition to what was happening. You go and you snag the woman when she is vulnerable like this. You take control.
Yes.
You don't sit there with a bunch of dudes crying with each other. You go to the woman and you take control. And Blake,
be a man,
did that. He did the John Cusack thing.
Yes.
She's out on the balcony.
He went and cared for her feelings.
Yes.
He didn't make it about Connor B.
exactly.
He went, hey, Connor B just came back, and she's like, oh, he came back. And he's like, yeah, anyway, he came back. All these little bitches were bawling. He's like, I wanted to make sure you were okay. He said you were over here in your sweatpants and you were sad. I'm here to take care of you. 'Cause I'm a fucking man.
Yes. So when 10 other guys are really concerned about Connor's feelings, I'm concerned about your feelings. And when he says that, I heard you were here in sweatpants, to be honest, they're mom jeans and a hoodie, but let's not get too bogged down in the details. So she invites him up. They just start making out in the hallway. He says all the right things. I mean, Blake isn't isn't smart, and he's not very articulate. Looks like everything he says takes a lot of work, and he's overwhelmed by it. But he did say the right things. He basically said, I wanted to make sure you were okay. She was completely taken by it, and now he's the leader in the clubhouse because of it. And why is he the leader in the clubhouse if he wasn't already the chosen one? Because he freaking took advantage of something that was like so disgusting and humiliating. And he said, okay, well, you guys are crying in here. I'm going to go do what we're supposed to do on the show and win the girl. And he did that. Good for Blake. Didn't necessarily get a rose per se, but he basically is golden. We get to the rose ceremony. The cocktail hour before the rose ceremony, Katie is so, like, I don't know, emotional, overwhelmed, whatever you want to call it. She enters the cocktail party. And by the way, there were like cat calls and guys saying, woo, all right, yeah. Like, that's what happens on this show. And she walks into the room and she's like, hey, I just want to let you know, I have my mind made up. I pretty much know how this is all going to play out for me. We're not even going to have a cocktail hour. We're just going to go right to the rose ceremony, which is fine. But the guys just start whining as usual, like little bitches about why she would do that.
Yes.
There are dudes again who
such babies
are pissed off that they're not going to have the time. Again, guys think that them being sent home or not comes down to the 3 minutes that they spend with her at the cocktail party, and she's ripped that from them. So there are people in the room right now, and now finally Dre and Aaron are starting to do some soul searching. Now, Aaron, this entire season has been about picking the guy that's not there for the right reason, getting the entire house against them, and that guy goes home. Aaron looks like the good guy for protecting her heart. Trey has been a soldier in that fight. Trey says, finally, maybe I have spent too much time talking about other guys and not enough time trying to work on my relationship with her, which is like, duh. Yes, that's exactly the problem.
Yes,
that's what we've been saying to you for the last 3 weeks. Aaron says, I fear that I've become a part of the drama that she wants to avoid, because Katie has the balls to admit to the room that she's sick of the drama, and there's no need to allow people to catch up. She knows what she wants. She can't say she's sick of the drama because she has not only asked for drama, she has rewarded dudes that bring drama to her this entire season. So it's like she's sent mixed messages. She wanted to know about the guys that weren't there for the
reason. She wants that information, and then she blows up everybody that was involved in giving her the information,
which you and I both predicted.
Yes. Like,
being that guy was going to buy
you. Don't be that guy. You go in the friend zone right away.
And that's exactly what happened. I mean, think about this particular episode. James was the one who said, I'm going to step on the grenade and tell Katie that Hunter's not here for the right reason. James was sent home. Aaron has been at it the entire season. He got sent home. Trey has been the most vocal guy in this entire thing about people trying to be fair and everything else. He got sent home. And then when it came down to it, for the second time in 2 or 3 weeks, like she was holding the rose, and the first name that she called after saying there wasn't going to be a cocktail hour and at the rose ceremony, she says, Hunter. So that was a little drama because all the dudes were deflated. Like, I can't believe she's going to give the rose to Hunter.
But then she's like, can I talk to you? And everybody knew what was up at that point.
Which is weird.
They tried to drag it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Why not talk to him at any point leading up to that? But she had to do it in that weird dramatic fashion. They talk, but she walked away with the rose. So the dudes are like, oh, wait, she's got the rose. Like, he's going to get the rose, whatever. He comes back into the room without the rose and then goes up on the platform to be one of the dudes that she chooses.
Just leave at that point.
Right. Yeah. So she picks – I wrote it down here. So she chooses, like, right off the bat, she basically says to the room – guys, I know what I want. I'm going to follow my heart. I'm going to pick the guys that I see a future with. And then the first person she says is Blake. And then Andrew, the Vienna football player, is next.
Yep.
Greg is the next guy that comes out. The virgin Mike B is another guy that gets a rose.
Yep.
And it comes down to the final rose. And this was kind of a dark horse. She gives it to Brendan, the Canadian.
Stunning.
Hasn't done a whole lot in this entire season. So that leaves Hunter going home. He said too much. Hunter, Aaron, James, and Trey, the drama supposedly is out of the house, and she's down to the final seven. My theory is that she has chosen Blake already as the guy.
No. It's either Blake or Greg. She likes Greg. They have dead dads in common. That was a hardcore connection. Now he hasn't had much time, but when they do have time, he asked her on this episode, hey, she's like, ask me one thing. And what he should have said is, am I going to win the show? But he goes, he says, like, how do you feel? Like, what? Yeah. And she's like, I have strong feelings for you too. Like, she made it. I mean, maybe she's playing it up for the camera.
She is.
She's into Greg and Blake, I think, exclusively.
I agree. And she does seem to be very worried about Greg's apprehension. Like, he doesn't look like a great poker player. Like, he wears his emotions on his sleeve. This is hard for him. He's falling for her. He doesn't like sharing her. And she thinks that he is getting hesitant and is going to fold to the pressure. Now, Trey, in his walk-off kind of interview, was like, look, I regret maybe spending too much time on the drama in the house. I should have spent more time on her. But he said something like, "Mom and Dad, I'm still the person you raised. I was me this entire time. I walk away, I'm a little hurt, but I'm always going to be me." And I'm thinking to myself, I think Trey kind of, you got to put him in the contender for the next Bachelor, I think. He was a likable guy, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I could see it. I could see it. Him or Andrew. Andrew's got the cool backstory. He's international. He does accents. You know,
that's true.
I could see it being either of those guys. And Andrew, something that you need as a backstory for The Bachelor, he's going to end up jilted on this show. Whereas Trey, he's an also-ran. He's Bachelor in Paradise fodder. He's not Bachelor contender. Whereas Andrew, he might get a hometown. Like, it's going to come down to Andrew, Greg, and Blake, I think it looks like at this point. And Andrew's got enough going on that he could be, you know, he could look really desirable as a Bachelor.
I think that's a good point. Probably. As Trey's walking off, and like, I remember there was that little vignette at the beginning where he's got this great family situation. It's very emotional. They could tap into that real easy, but we know that it'll be Trey or Andrew or someone of their ilk.
Yes.
Now, Steve Carbone, Reality Steve, I'm sure he already knows who The Bachelor is.
Of course he does.
He has already spoiled the winner of this show that
he has?
I'm sure. He's already working on Bachelor in Paradise, which is shooting, right?
Yes, yeah.
So we'll have him on at the end of the season to get all these answers here.
We will talk to him. Before we wrap up, the last episode you coined a term, barebacking, which we named that episode, and that's a word for people that ride horses with no saddle. We got an email about that. This is from Chris. In regards to Jason's use of the term, quote, barebacking to describe riding a horse without a saddle, as someone who grew up in West Texas and whose uncle raised quarter horses, I can tell you that the correct term is, quote, raw dogging, end quote. So that's regards, Chris. That's from Chris. He's corrects your terminology a little bit. I believe.
No,
you called
it. This guy
raised horses, Jason.
First and foremost, raw dogging, dog, horse. That doesn't make any sense.
Hey, get along, little doggy.
Not Dan, our guy, not Dan Holden, on Twitter,
yeah,
already says that he grew up with horses and that barebacking is when you ride a horse without a saddle. If you literally right now go to Google and type in bareback,
don't do that. No one should do that
without a saddle.
No one within the sound of my voice type in that term to a Google or Bing or Yahoo search. Not a good idea. Okay, let's wrap it up there. For Jason Stewart, my name is Brian Beckner. This has been The Bachelor Lifestyle from theballerlifestyle.com. We will see you next week. How embarrassing, the most dramatic ever, and that's what we like. Play your cards right, you might end up on paradise. Here's the key to the fantasy suite. Balls deep so you can sleep with your third or fourth girl in a week. We're making a connection, we're falling in love. We chilling in the mansion, outside's the hot tub. We starting in LA and then we travel the world. We toasting champagne, we got 32 girls. Who gets a hometown and who's the most hated? Who had the best date and who's getting eliminated? We always speculating like you wouldn't believe. But I cheated, logged on to Reality Steve. So it's the Bachelor lifestyle we living in. It's the baller lifestyle we living in. It's the Bachelor lifestyle we living in. It's the baller lifestyle. It's the Bachelor lifestyle we living in. It's the baller lifestyle we living in. It's the Bachelor lifestyle we living in. It's the baller.